Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is retired Army Major General John Gronsky. And since retiring from the military, he has become a leadership consultant, a speaker, and he's also the author of the books, The Ride of Our Lives and Iron Sharpened Leadership. I'm really excited to have him here today because we're going to be talking about leadership and how it relates to the soldiers and the troops and the people in general that you might be in charge of in your own life. You know, if you're a team leader or anywhere up the chain of command, there are people that you are in charge of. And we want to talk about the leadership skills that are necessary to be able to help take care of those people that are under your command. So welcome to the show, sir. I'm glad to have you on.
Hey, Scott, I really appreciate you inviting me to be on your show, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, I am too. This is one of those conversations that when I got the opportunity to get in touch with you and I started really digging into your background and finding out all the things that you've accomplished throughout your career, your long career, and just really, really impressive stuff that you've done. And I'm really excited to have you on. So I know I've done my homework, but for the listeners out there who may not be as familiar with you as maybe I am, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. You know, I got my commission in the Army in 1978. You know, back in 1978, I never thought in 2019 I would still be wearing the uniform. So, you know, a little over 40 years in uniform, both on active duty and in the Pennsylvania Army National Guard. Just some of the quick highlights. You know, I had an opportunity to serve in Lithuania for a year back in 2000, which was a pretty exciting experience since it was only 7 years after the Lithuanians regained their independence from the Soviet Union. And now we see all that's going on in that part of the world right now, you know, with the unfortunate war in Ukraine. And the Lithuanians are right on the, you know, right on the cusp of all that is happening, being their geographic proximity. And, you know, the honor to command a brigade in Ramadi, Iraq in 2005 and 2006, had the opportunity to lead 5,000 soldiers and Marines there. So, you know, just a great honor in that struggle. And then, you know, was able, again, just very fortunate, the honor to command the 28th Infantry Division, 15,000 soldiers. And then the last 3 years of my career, I spent as one of the deputy commanding generals at U.S. Army Europe, stationed in Wiesbaden, Germany, but traveled to well over 40 countries on business, many times over, actually. And again, I served there from 2016 until 2019, when I retired at that point, and decided that based on my 40 years of experience, many of the mistakes I made transferred into lessons I learned about leadership. And so I started a leadership consulting company and leadership training company, had the opportunity to write two books, The Ride of Our Lives, based on a bicycle trip I took back in 1983, you know, analog world, with my wife and my 15-month-old son, Stephen. And we biked from pretty much from coast to coast, from Tacoma, Washington, to northeastern Pennsylvania, all self-contained, two-man backpacking tent, two sleeping bags, and one burner stove to cook our chow with. And that was that really helped form some of my leadership philosophy. And then I wrote the book Iron Sharpened Leadership. Again, a book that's based on many of the lessons I learned due to primarily mistakes I made, and you know, just wanted to share some of those lessons with other people in whatever leadership position they're in, so they could learn from some of the trials that I have had.
And that bike ride that you mentioned, going, I say it's a bike ride, like, you know, going down to the store to pick up some groceries or something. That's not a bike ride. That's a journey. That's something, you know, especially back then there's, you know, people now might think, okay, well, you know, you just pull up Google Maps on your phone or something and you got the directions to show you where to go and, you know, the best road conditions and the weather and all that kind of stuff. You didn't have any of that stuff back then. Like that was that you're out there, you, your wife, your son, and the elements. And that, I mean, and whatever you can carry on your back or in the bags on the side of your bike, that's pretty much all you had, right?
Yeah. You know, we hit snow in the Cascade mountain range in Oregon. We hit like 115 degree temperatures in Pueblo, Colorado. And the winds of Kansas were probably the worst part of the whole trip, worse than wow. any of the mountains that we climbed. But again, it was 3 months on the road, over 4,500 miles. And it taught me a lot about teamwork. It taught me a lot about, you know, being resilient, not giving up. And we're going to be talking about caring for people you lead, you know, caring for my wife, caring for my young son. That's what leadership is really all about.
Yeah. And that is, I think, a perfect segue into your leadership career, your professional career in the military, because you're right. There's so many things that you've had to learn through that journey. I mean, you may have known a lot of that stuff before, you know, being a parent, you know, you have to take care of your children and all that kind of stuff, right? But it's different when it's literally just you, your wife, and your son. There's nobody else there. There's no grandparents to pick up the phone and call and have them come help out. There's no neighbors or relatives that are nearby. There's none of that stuff. It's just you. And you really do need to focus on the overall well-being of everyone involved, including yourself, right? That's part of it too. If you can't take care of yourself, then you're not going to be very much use to the people who are around you, right?
Yeah, you know, I talk about leaders, you know, taking care of their followers, but the other part of care, and I've written about this, is that leaders also need to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, not at the expense of the people they lead, but leaders do need to do self-care, you know, make sure you're getting the sleep, the exercise, the nutrition, because if a leader isn't taking care of themselves, it's pretty hard for them to take care of others in their charge. So yeah, self-care is extremely important.
Yeah, and I've used this example before too, but it's like when you get on an airplane and they tell you to put the oxygen mask on first before helping out others, it's so that you don't pass out and then become useless to the person who's sitting next to you, right? So, you know, it's not selfish that you're taking care of yourself, but you also, you're doing that so that you can help the other people. It's
absolutely
not in lieu of, right?
Yeah. You have to keep that in the perspective. And it's absolutely essential for leader self-care. But with that said, I always still say that, you know, one of the, you know, tenets of leadership is putting the welfare of those you lead before your own welfare. You know, right. It's that whole, you know, like we learn in the Army, learn in the Marines, you know, leaders eat last. You know, we yes. have to make sure our soldiers, you know, are taken care of before we take care of ourselves. And you know, that's why not everybody wants to be a leader. You know, leadership comes with risk. You know, it's not about, and as you go up the chain, you know, it's not about, oh, you know, now I'm moving up from like a team leader in the Army to a squad leader to a platoon sergeant. It's not about, oh, now I have more people to take care of me, or now I have more people to serve me. It's like, no, now I have more people that I need to serve. That's what it's about. And it's important that leaders don't get that turned around.
Yeah, and that's an important perspective too, because you're not just taking all of their skills and their and using it for yourself for to advance your own career, your own position and stuff like that. You're there as their leader. They're looking up to you for guidance, for support and all that kind of stuff. And that falls on you as that leader. You need to be able to be there for those troops, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's. I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, there's certain dirty words when it comes to leadership. You know, things we don't want to be. You know, we don't want to exhibit cronyism. We don't want to exhibit favoritism. You know, we don't want to exhibit, you know, racism. You know, all those isms we don't want to exhibit. But ambition really shouldn't be a dirty word. And when I'm talking about ambition as it relates to leadership, it's not about a leader's ambition for their own career. It's about the leader's ambition for the organization which they lead. And it's about the leader's ambition for the people that they lead. You know, it's doing your best to take care of your people and making sure they get the training they need and you know, just the care from the leader that they need in order for those followers to become the best that they could be. And that's right. Certainly an important responsibility, I believe, of a leader.
Yeah, no, for sure. And there's certain characteristics that a leader just needs to have. Certain things, and you've talked about this in your book, The Iron Sharpened Leadership. What are some of those characteristics that you feel that are just the foundation for a good leader?
Yeah, absolutely. The foundation is strong character, you know, and values such as integrity. And you know, leaders cannot mortgage their values in order to get ahead, because whenever leaders do that, they only get behind. You know, you've got to stay true to your principles. You've got to stay true to your values. And so that's foundational. You know, I mean, the values that we learn in the Marines and the Army, all of those things. And then along with organizational values, we also have to spend the time to be introspective enough to really reflect on what are our own personal core values, which could be a little bit different than our organizational values. But I found that if a person doesn't spend the time to reflect on what their personal core values are, and if we believe that when we're making personal decisions, it's important to factor our values into the personal decisions we make, how are you going to do that if you don't even know what your values are? So, you know, extremely important to go through that, you know, could be a 6-month journey, could be a year journey, to really reflect on, hey, what's important to me when my back's against the wall? What are those values that I'm really going to stand for? So you have to go through that introspective journey. And that really, I believe, will help people. That it's a spirit. You know, I talk about spiritual fitness. That's part of spiritual fitness, to reflect on those values. And then when you're going through a challenge, you know, you could really use those values as a foundation to stay the course and stay self-disciplined and see things through even when things are challenging.
And that's kind of like having a roadmap, you know, going back to your bike ride, right? If you didn't have a roadmap, some sort of direction for where you're going and where you're headed and knowing what you needed to do to get to your final destination, you'd be lost. You wouldn't know what to do. Right. And same thing with these values, they help set you in that right direction.
Yeah, I know we want to talk about, you know, the importance of people staying resilient and being able to overcome challenges, life challenges, adversity. And one of the big things there is you have to be clear on what your life purpose is. You know, if you understand what your purpose is, you could put up with almost any how or challenge in your life. You know, Nietzsche had said that, you know, the great philosopher. So again, purpose is a powerful thing. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you the truth. When I got out of the Army in 2019, you know, I kind of was rudderless for a while and was kind of floundering a little bit. And it was not until I really thought long and hard about, hey, what is my life purpose? What is my purpose now? That I was able to get back on track and feel productive again and just, you know, do all the things I know one has to do in order to stay healthy. But, you know, purpose is extremely powerful and will help people overcome adversity and challenges.
Yeah, and that sense of purpose is what I found from talking through all these, I don't know, probably 180, 190 some odd episodes at this point, talking to all these people, having a sense of purpose is really what makes the difference when you get out of the military. Because when you're in the military, it's easy to say, I have a sense of purpose. You're serving your country. You're serving something much bigger than yourself. But when you get out, now it's you against the world. What is your purpose? What is it that you need to do to set yourself up for success to go after that purpose?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. And I think for anyone who's listening to the podcast, who is transitioning out of the military, or maybe making a transition, you know, from a civilian career to maybe into retirement or whatever the case might be, you know, that sense of purpose is extremely important. But the other thing I found is extremely important. You know, when we're working for a civilian organization or in the military or law enforcement or whatever that field might be, we've got folks around us, you know, we've got our buddy teams around us, right? And then when we transition out, all of a sudden that support system that was automatically there all the time isn't there. So really what I set out to do was find people in my life outside of my family who I could kind of count on as a quasi board of directors, if you will, you know, just people that, hey, I could count on, you know, I know I could dial them up anytime, ask them for a little bit of advice, or even if I'm feeling a little bit down or I think I'm going a little bit off path, I could call them and just kind of check in and get them to help me gather my thoughts and keep me on the right path. So I think it's important to find those people in your life, of course, family members, but then also people outside of your family that you could kind of form around yourself, because it's just not ready-made when you transition out of the military like it is when you're in the military.
Right. And so, yeah, exactly. You need to basically create that support structure for yourself, whether it's family members or friends or coworkers or whoever it is, you have to create that. And that brings me to the title of your book, The Iron Sharpened Leadership, which is in reference to the Proverbs 27:17, right? That yes. As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. And yes. And so we need those people in our life. We need to have those connections so that we can help each other out. You may go fast on your own, but you're not going to go too far on your own, right?
Yeah. And then it's you know, this whole notion of iron sharpens iron. This is what it means to me. And this is why it resonates with me so much. It means finding people who are a little bit more talented than you are, finding people that are a little bit more stronger than you are. You know, there's this saying, you know, if you're the strongest person in the gym, find another gym, right? If you're the smartest person in the room, find another room. You know, you always want to try to associate with people who are just, you know, have a little bit more talent or a little bit more strength. And I use strength not only physically, but could be emotionally, mentally, spiritually, however you want to term that. But, you know, surround yourself with people who could make you a little bit stronger just by being in their presence. But at the same time, now you've got to give back. You've got to reach down to other people who maybe aren't quite as strong as you are and now coach and mentor and help them along the way too. So think of, isn't that a great, it's almost like a chain. If you're reaching up for stronger people to help you and you're getting stronger, now you're reaching down to somebody who might be a little bit weaker and you're helping them get stronger. It's just a great thing.
And actually, as you were saying that, I had this vision in my mind come up of people climbing up a mountain and just basically forming a chain with their arms, trying to help pull each other up, right? And it takes that person who's at the very top to be able to help that next person down, and then the next all the way down to the person who's still at base camp at the bottom of the mountain, right? And helping each other pull up, right? And that, to some people, when you talk about leadership, right, some people look at that as, well, if I help this person who's below me, they're going to now advance ahead of me, right? And then that's going to leave me in the dust, and I'm not going to get that next promotion. But if you think about it that way, you're not looking at getting into that room where you're not the smartest person anymore. You're not looking to advance yourself as well. And you need to focus on, I mean, even to this day, you always need to be improving yourself and learning new things and everything like that. So you can be that better leader who can help continue to bring up those people who are under you. Right.
You know, Scott, this is the other thing. People who have that attitude that if I help this person along, it's probably going to, you know, push me back.
Yeah.
I don't think anything could be farther from the truth. I think when you focus on advancing yourself rather than helping somebody else to advance, your heart remains empty. The only way to fill your heart is by trying to help other people.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll advance if you don't help somebody out. And you actually, if you push somebody down, maybe you'll advance. But I will tell you, you'll be advancing with a empty heart and you will not have joy in your life.
Yeah.
The only way to get joy in your life, I believe, is by filling your heart with joy. And I think the only way to do that is by helping other people. So again, it's kind of counterintuitive. You do not get ahead if you try to push other people back. You do not get ahead if you don't try to help other people advance. It's a counterintuitive thing, but if you want joy in your heart, and if you want to just have that feeling of righteousness, you've got to be willing to help others.
And I had that same thought pop in my head where that mountain, right, where people before were working as a chain, working together to help each other all up the mountain. But then as you're talking about that, I had the vision of this one link in the chain who, instead of pulling up, was now stepping on the head of the guy under him, trying to work his way up. He's not going to get too far. There's not going to be too many people who want to help that person out if he's going to just be stomping on their heads, pushing them down as he's trying to work his way up. So that vision is just, to me, it's just very powerful in thinking about how you can move in advance by helping other people as well.
Yeah. And you know, that whole, you know, picture you just painted of somebody stepping on somebody else's head and pushing them down, I think that's the definition of toxic leadership.
Yeah.
And there's a lot been written and talked about toxic leaders, you know, people who are poisonous to an organization, people who are caustic. And I like to say, you know, you will not be labeled as a toxic leader if you simply treat the people you lead with dignity and respect. You know, over in Iraq, we talked a lot about treating the Iraqi civilians with dignity and respect, right? And you know, leaders need to do that with the people they lead. Yeah. And some people ask me, well, wait a minute, don't toxic leaders get ahead sometimes? You know, don't toxic leaders sometimes become successful? And I'll say, yeah, toxic leaders could be successful, but it's usually for a very short-lived time. If you want to have long-term success, that's what servant leadership is all about. And if you don't mind, to tell just a quick little story here, I have a friend who wrote a book about, you know, how important strong character is. And in the course of writing the book, he actually interviewed Coach Krzyzewski, you know, Coach K from Duke.
Yep.
And he was talking to Coach K, and Coach K was talking a lot about values and character. And the interviewer said, well, Coach, he goes, what does character have to do with winning a basketball game? Coach K looked at him and he said, you know, character has absolutely nothing at all to do with winning a basketball game. Nothing. But it has everything to do with winning a championship. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, a toxic leader could win a game now and then, but if you want to be a champion, you've got to be a servant leader.
Right. And that is a perfect way to think of it too, because that character is what's going to take you further. That character is not in the short run, maybe a toxic leader is going to get a win. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut, right? Like you can get the win, even if you're not doing things the right way, but eventually it's not going to take you as far as you could go. And so that's a great way to think of it.
And I was just going to say, Scott, a real world example is what's going on in Ukraine right now. I mean, Putin being a toxic leader, you know, because he's been so toxic, people around him were afraid to bring him information that he needed to know to make better decisions.
Right.
Because he's corrupt, everything around him was corrupt, and he didn't have the military that he thought he had. You know, I'm sure a lot of that money that he thought was being spent on military equipment was lining the pockets of oligarchs. So again, it comes to disaster in the long run if you're toxic.
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing the resistance that the Ukrainian people are putting up right now. They're able to hold back the Russian military, fairly well, given the resources and everything that they have had available to them. I know they're over time they've gotten more resources and everything, but they stood their ground pretty well, I think, given what they had available to them.
Absolutely.
So you also mentioned a story I heard on another podcast that you did about an EOD, I think it was a Marine in Ramadi, who was going through and he was injured while he was performing his duties. But I'd like to hear in your words how his reaction to that injury basically exemplified the ability to take care of your troops.
Yeah. You're talking about Gunnery Sergeant Iron Mike Burkhart.
I love that name too.
Yeah. A friend of mine, we still stay in touch. And this happened on September 19, 2005, Ramadi, Iraq. We had a patrol out that day, a mounted patrol, four up-armored Humvees led by Lieutenant Dooley from the Vermont National Guard. And as he was leading his patrol, they began to get small arms fire from an insurgent position near a railroad bed, and Lieutenant Dooley began to maneuver his platoon toward that insurgent position. And as he was maneuvering in his vehicle, a subsurface IED unfortunately detonated below his vehicle and instantly killed Lieutenant Dooley and the other two soldiers in his vehicle, Sergeant Egan and Specialist Fernandez. They were all three killed in action immediately. And whenever we would have attacks like this occur, we would try to send down an EOD team, explosive ordnance disposal team, to do what we call a post-blast analysis to determine the tactics, techniques, procedures the insurgents were using so we could try to keep these attacks from happening again in the future. And Burkhart gets down there, has two young Marines with him. It's a chaotic scene. To add to the chaos, there was an embed reporting team from the Omaha World Herald down there while all this is going on. And Burkhart gets to the area, he sees the destroyed up armored Humvee. He sees a crater near the up armored Humvee, about a couple of feet deep, about 4 feet in diameter. He made a quick assessment. That's probably where the roadside bomb that destroyed that up armored Humvee had been placed. He jumps down in the crater, take a closer look, sees a live roadside bomb directly in front of him, buried in that crater, red dead cord running into the nose of two artillery shells, takes his K-bar knife, cuts the red dead cord, neutralizes that particular IED. But he didn't see a third artillery shell in the crater behind him. Insurgent off in the distance, wireless detonation device, clicks the button on it, detonates, knocks Gunny Burkhart about 15 feet into the air. He's unconscious, pants soaked with blood. Our soldiers immediately go to him, thinking he probably was dead. But as they get to him, they see, he's breathing. They call in a medevac helicopter because they believe those wounds were very, very severe. Cut off his pants, begin working on him. And a few minutes later, Burkhart regains consciousness, has no feeling from the legs down. Asking if he had his legs, the soldier said, "Yeah, Gunny, you got both of your legs." He, a couple of minutes later, gets a tingling sensation in his legs. He tells the soldiers he wants to try to stand up. They couldn't believe it. Yeah, just got him blown up, minutes earlier. He struggles to his feet. The soldiers are around him. Medevac helicopter lands on the ground behind them, and the soldiers tell Gunny, "Hey, Gunny, how about laying on the stretcher? We got to carry you to the chopper." And he looks at the soldiers and he says, "I'm not going to have you carry me to that chopper on the stretcher. I'm going to walk there under my own power because I don't want the insurgents to have the pleasure of seeing me being carried to the chopper." And as he says that, raises his hand into the air and gives the insurgents a hand and arm signal, a one finger salute, if you will. And the reporter from the Omaha World Herald takes that picture at the exact same moment, you know, finger raised into the air, no pants on, groin protector from his IBA, you know, covering the necessary parts there. And that picture has become an iconic picture from our war in Iraq. And anybody could find it if they Google Gunny Burkhart. But this is the leadership point of that story. And Gunny told me this himself. He said the reason he didn't want to be carried to the chopper, the reason he wanted to walk there under his own power, that had nothing at all to do with what he thought the insurgents were thinking. The reason he wanted to walk to that helicopter is because of those two young Marines he had out there with him that day. He knew those two young Marines were going to be out there later on that day, probably neutralizing other roadside bombs. And he didn't want to shatter their confidence. So the point, the leadership point is, even minutes after getting blown up, his main concern wasn't with his own wounds. His main concern was with those two young Marines who he was leading that day. And I like to say, isn't that really what leadership is all about? Caring more for those you lead than you care for yourself. Other thing about Gunny, you know, just to show what kind of leader he was never evacuated to Baghdad and Germany and the United States. He recovered from those wounds on our forward operating base. 4 weeks later, he was out there again, neutralizing roadside bombs. So just an incredible man. And I'm very proud to call him a friend.
Yeah. And so you mentioned Lieutenant Dooley with the Vermont Army National Guard. And my brother also was in the Vermont Army National Guard. He was in Ramadi at the same time, not at the time that Lieutenant Dooley and the other soldiers were killed, but he came in, I think at the end of 2005, early 2006, at that time frame, kind of as just plussing up the numbers, I think. You know, he some of the stories and some of the pictures and stuff that he would show us after he got back home and talking about were just, you know, mind blowing to think that, you know, people actually have to experience all this stuff there. That was just a very tough time to be in Iraq, or really to be anywhere, to live through that kind of stuff. But you know, so with that said, my brother was also under your chain of command as well. And you know, I think it's leaders all the way up and down the chain of command that make people like Gunny, like you were talking about, like him being able to say, you know what, I want to put these men first. I want to think about them before my own situation, because I don't care who you are, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to be carried off in a stretcher than it is to be walking to the helicopter with blood dripping out of God knows where, and you know, your pants off, everything like that, showing your business to the whole world, right? Especially with reporters there, with cameras and everything, it's gonna be a heck of a lot easier to be carried off. But that's not what he wanted. That he didn't want that for his soldiers. I truly believe that it's like I said, it's the leaders up and down the chain of command that made it so that he had the confidence and the ability to do that type of work and be that type of leader. You know, it wasn't a one man job that did that. But not taking anything away from what he did and the type of character that he has, but he didn't learn, he learned that from somewhere, and I really believe that came from you know, the leadership going into there. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's why being a servant leader, being a character-based leader, is so powerful, because you could have generational impacts. I mean, think about the soldiers on the ground that day that saw how Gunny Burkhart carried himself, right? How he was more concerned with those two young Marines than he was with his own wounds. I am sure, you know, that really formed and shaped the leadership characteristics of many of the soldiers who were out there watching him that day. And they'll act that way. And then, you know, 20 years from now, people they're leading right now will also act that way. I mean, it's generational. The impact is astounding. And you know, just getting back to basic leadership, you know, a sergeant in the Army, you know, a team leader, you know, he's leading four other people in his fire team. And I used to tell sergeants this all the time. The same could apply to a foreman in a factory, not a foreman, but maybe a team leader in a factory, is that, you know, those young people. Okay, so maybe it's a 22-year-old sergeant, right? But those 18-year-old privates that are serving with that sergeant, look to that 22-year-old sergeant as a god. You know, as far as they're concerned, wow, he's a non-commissioned officer. He's been around. You know, he's been around the block. He's got this experience. And so I tell these sergeants, you could change somebody's life just by the way you decide to lead. And it's a very powerful position to be in. And so no matter how many people you lead, or no matter what your experience level as a leader is, you have to really understand that people are watching you, people respect you, and people are going to mold their leadership behavior off of the leadership behavior they see you demonstrate.
Right. And that could be good or bad. You know, if you are one of those toxic leaders who is a bad leader, you will have that same impact on those soldiers. And it's like, you put crap in, you're going to get crap out. You put good stuff in, you're going to get good stuff out. And so it's really up to the leaders to determine what type of soldiers or workers in a factory or whatever the case may be, what type of people that you're going to end up leading.
Yeah. And you know, that's why it's important for leaders who are a little bit higher up the chain to get around and circulate and just talk to the basic soldier, the basic worker out there. Because one thing about toxic leaders I found in my 40 years of serving in the Army and other leadership experiences is that toxic leaders have a way of hiding their toxicity from their boss. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
They toxic leaders, you know, are kind of like sycophants. You know, I use that fancy word so I don't have to use the word that's a little bit more vulgar than that. But, you know, kissing somebody's butt. But toxic leaders have a way of hiding their toxicity from their boss. So unless, you know, the boss gets around and circulates and just talks to the common worker or soldier out there, and then they could kind of start to pick up some cues of, hey, is this a good leader or is this a toxic leader? So that's one of the reasons a leader has to circulate down to various levels.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, like you said, for the leaders to get down to the various levels to see what's going on in their own with their own eyes, because just like you were saying before with Russia and Putin, you know, he kept having the yes men coming to him and saying, oh yeah, everything's fine, the money's going where it's supposed to be going, all the training's happening, we have this world-class elite military and everything is a-okay. I'm sure in different words, obviously. But without Putin going out to the actual troops in the unit and seeing what's happening and seeing what type of training they're getting and actually seeing with his own eyes, how could he know for sure one way or the other if this was going to be what he was expecting it to be?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other important thing for leaders, especially young leaders or aspiring leaders, to realize, like, when you're out there circulating, okay, so what does that mean? What are you supposed to be doing? Really, what you need to do is keep an eye on what obstacles are in the way of the people you're leading that's preventing them from doing their job as well as they could be doing it. You have to keep an eye out for that. Or what resources do they need so they could do their job a little bit better? Those are the things a leader needs to be looking for, besides, you know, just talking to the troops and really getting to know the troops. That's important. But once you identify what obstacles are in their way, you might be in a position of authority where you could remove that obstacle now. maybe the actual, you know, soldier on the ground, you know, worker on the ground didn't have the authority to remove the obstacle, but you could. Or if you don't have the authority, now you have to show the personal courage to go to your boss and try to get your boss to remove that obstacle. Or now you could provide a resource to your people if you see that they need a particular resource that they don't have. Or again, go to your boss and fight for that resource. So those are the things leaders need to be doing when they're circulating. They're just not out there. Yeah, you're out there, you're trying to get to know your people, but it's just not about being out there glad handing everybody, you know? Hey, you could glad hand all you want, but at the end of the day, what your people really want is, hey, remove these obstacles that are just killing us. Right. And give me this resource I need, because everybody wants to do a good job. And it's that leader's responsibility to keep an eye out for those things.
And I think on the lower leadership levels, the people who are dealing directly with, so like the team leaders dealing directly with their team, or the squad leaders, or platoon sergeants even, when they're dealing with their individual soldiers, I think it's important for them to also, we sort of talked about this before, but leading by example. And showing that with regards to things like mental health, right? Showing that it's okay to go and talk to somebody, to go get treatment, to go, be vulnerable in that sense, right? And as a leader, a lot of times, especially I know when I was in, it was kind of one of those things where you didn't show that vulnerability. You kind of just were, and that's okay too, to be strong and to, be a strong leader, but also letting people know that it's okay to take care of things that need to be taken care of as well, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm Scott, I'm so happy you mentioned vulnerability, because, you know, so how do leaders help the people they lead become more resilient? First of all, really getting to know your people. So if a person's personality is off, or if their emotions are off, you'll be able to detect that. You know, and you'll be able to ask them, hey, is everything okay? What's going on with you? To, you know, maybe get them to somebody who's a little bit more, in the profession of helping them deal with some issues, you know? So that's one thing right there. And then also allow yourself to be vulnerable by sharing stories about yourself, about how, you know, some struggles you've had in the past, and how you were able to overcome those struggles, and let people know, hey, I had to reach out, I had to get help. It's okay to ask for help. You know, so just allowing yourself to be vulnerable, to share those stories, because, you know, a lot of times people look at a leader and they think, oh, that person's a leader. They probably never made a mistake. They probably never had a bad day. They probably never struggled with emotional behavior issues or anything, you know, but that we all know that's bull crap. You know, we all know as leaders, we struggle emotionally. We struggle with family issues. We struggle with guilt issues. You know, we served over in combat and we came back and some of our buddies didn't. I mean, we struggle with all those issues ourselves. And the only way we've been able to get through it is by asking for help. And it's okay to let the people you lead know that it's okay to ask for help. So those are such important things for leaders to do on a day-to-day basis, so you can help your people become more resilient and overcome these emotional and mental challenges that many of the people face out there.
And that goes back to what we were talking about before, by leading by example and talking about putting in the effort that you want to see coming out of the people that you're leading. And so, like you said, talking about the things that you've done, that you've experienced, talking about your own personal experiences, help to just show that, hey, you know what? It's okay to be human. It's okay to have these normal reactions to abnormal situations that most people never experience in their lifetime. But here you are, you experienced it, and now you're having this normal reaction to it. How do you deal with it? Well, this is how I dealt with it. Right.
Yeah, you know, Scott, I think it's particularly hard for people in the military profession or in law enforcement, because we join those professions because we want to be a protector, right? Yeah. We want to protect others. And when you see yourself as a protector, a lot of times you don't realize that, hey, sometimes you need protection too, mm-hmm. you know, your role as a protector, you want to kind of steel yourself and be tough and pretend you don't need anybody's help. I could handle this, but man, everybody needs some help, and right. leaders need to go around and get that message out to your followers that, hey, it's okay to ask for help. It's like, if you're in a gym and you want to get stronger, don't you ask for somebody to spot you on the weight bench,
right.
you know? So that's asking for some help, you know? And again, if we want to get stronger emotionally or mentally, a lot of times we have to ask somebody to help us a little bit. Hey, could you spot me, you know, because I'm having a bad day today. So I need somebody to talk to. No different than, you know, how you would get a spotter in a weight room spotting you if you're benching.
Right. Exactly. Because you're only going to hit a cap of how much you can do on your own without having that support, because, you know, you don't want to be putting up way more weight than you're physically capable of doing at this point without that guidance there. Cause otherwise you're going to be missing a few teeth on the way down. Go. Right.
Yeah.
You know, but this podcast, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about in terms of helping other people, but this podcast, and I talked about this earlier with you before we started recording, it started after several soldiers I served with came back home, took their own lives. And I didn't want to sit around waiting for another phone call telling me that another friend that lost their battle with PTSD or whatever they were dealing with, right? And I also realized that this was a problem that stretched far beyond the people that I served with. The statistic that gets thrown around, 22 veterans a day take their lives. I'm sure that fluctuates, you know, over the course of time. But the way I've always thought about it is, imagine being the 23rd person in a room with 22 other people, knowing that by the end of the day, you're going to be the last man standing. Now, just think about that, right? You know they're all going to take their lives at some point during the day. Would you just hang around and just do nothing all day and just go about your business and forget about all those people? Or would you help other people in the room, right? I think most of us, especially the people who aspire to be good leaders, would try to do something to help the other people in the room. So that's basically where this podcast came from. I didn't want to be standing in the corner of this room just watching these people fall every day. And I may not be able to save everybody who's in the room. I can do my best to try to help as many as I can. But with that said, I think the more people that we have in these rooms, these rooms that I'm drawing that picture of, the more help we can offer, right? And so if we have 44 people in the room, we got a one-on-one basis now. We're able to help each individual working through their own situations, right? And the more lives ultimately, I think we'll be able to save. That's why I think it's important for even taking this outside of the military itself, where you have your team leaders, your squad leaders, all the way up the chain of command. You start looking at veteran organizations like the VFW, the American Legion, other organizations. I'm just picking on those two right now, but there's plenty of other organizations that are out there like that. What can these organizations out there do to help people who are transitioning out of the military service and deal with their PTSD and the other issues that they might be going through from a leadership perspective?
Yeah, I think the big thing is that they need to let people know who are transitioning out that, hey, we are here for you. We're not going to judge you. We're here to listen. I think networking is a big thing. I think the more networking that they could provide, so people with those shared experiences could come together. You know how it is. If you're dealing with a situation, it's much easier to talk to someone who has also dealt with a similar situation. You feel more comfortable talking to people like that. So I think just to try to form those communities of people who are willing to provide some lessons from the transition that they went through and just try to pass down a little bit are extremely helpful. But I think the biggest thing that could come out of it is the networking aspect, because now, again, people with shared experiences are talking to other people with similar experiences, and it's much easier to open up to people like that.
Yeah, and that networking is huge. And it goes back to what you were saying before about having that group of people in your life, right? That you may get out of the military and not really, maybe you don't have a family life. Maybe you're not married. You don't have much relatives around your area, or whatever. You don't have people to fall back on. But when you start building this network, and that's, I think I mentioned earlier, you actually have to work at this, and you have to build this network of people to have in your life. And organizations like this have those other like-minded people who have gone through similar experiences. And so that's a perfect place to start, is going into these organizations and just saying, hey, I'd like to get involved, get to know some more people. And but you're right. I think from the organization standpoint, they need to get out into that community, that the military community, and let people know, hey, we're here for you. We're here to help support you in whatever way we can.
Yeah, you know, I do want to mention, I live in South Central Pennsylvania, about an hour, 45 minutes from Philadelphia. There's a great veterans organization in the Philadelphia region, the Greater Philadelphia Veterans Network. So if there's anybody from any other part of the country listening who is trying to form a similar type of group, you could Google, the Greater Philadelphia Veterans Network, reach out to some people there. They do a tremendous job helping veterans who are transitioning out, find a path, find a way, whether you want to be an entrepreneur or whether you want to work, for a company, a civilian company after transitioning out. Great, great association. So I recommend anybody who's listening, reach out to them. They could help you. And just a big shout out to the Greater Philadelphia Veterans Network, because I know they do a tremendous amount of work to help veterans who are transitioning. Another organization is Four Block. Four Block is a really great organization to help veterans who are transitioning. So there's many organizations like that out there. Those are two that I'm involved with and two that come to my mind that I just wanted to share with people.
Yeah. And you know what? The other nice thing about having a podcast like this is I get to talk to people like yourself who are involved with these organizations, who are out there doing things for veterans. And all that stuff is great. But if people don't know that they exist, then for those people anyways, it's not really very beneficial. So being able to talk about these organizations is great. It gives just one more tool in the toolbox that people can use. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're all maybe not for everyone, but they're out there for somebody. And hopefully we can reach the right people and get them the help that they need through the services that these organizations offer. And I think, to me, that's really the name of the game, just pointing people in the right direction and letting the people who do the work best do the work and help the people as best as they can.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got the expertise. They've been dealing with veterans now for many years. And yeah, you might as well try to go with organizations who have a good track record helping transitioning veterans.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I know we're kind of closing in on the hour mark here on this episode, and time has just literally flown by. I think I could probably sit here and talk with you all day, but I know you're a busy man. I don't want to keep you. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your consulting and the services that you offer, and as well as your books and where people can find those as well to help support you and get your message out there to more people.
Yeah, Scott, thanks for asking about that. I do have a pretty cool website. It's johngronsky.com. And people could go to that website. There's a lot of free leadership development material on that website. There's a leadership blog that I write they have access to. You could access my YouTube channel where I have short leadership videos. There is a free leadership e-pamphlet that people could download for free. that cover, you know, some of the things we talked about in terms of character, competence, and resilience. There's a free periodic leadership email that I send out. It's called Leadership Sharpeners, so people could register and you'll receive that every few weeks. So again, just some cool leadership resources. If you want to purchase my book, go to my website. There's a link to my e-commerce site where you could purchase a signed copy of either Iron Sharpened Leadership or The Ride of Our Lives. And then when people read my books, you know, if they want to reconnect with me, ask me a question about the book or you know, just something that they read that they maybe don't quite understand, that they want to get a little bit more information on, I'm always glad just to be available to people to provide any more insight that they might be after. And then, you know, I just did a two-day leadership workshop for law enforcement officers and for leaders from other civilian sectors this past Thursday and Friday. Conducted that leadership seminar, two-day leadership and resiliency workshop in Somerset County, New Jersey. I'll be doing another similar workshop in the Allentown, Pennsylvania area in September, and then another workshop like that in Northern New Jersey in November. So I do two-day leadership workshops that are very well received. And then I do a lot of keynote speaking for organizations. I do a lot of leadership seminars for colleges and again, other civilian organizations and also for military. And anytime I do anything for the military, it's usually always pro bono, always glad to help. So those are some of the things I do. And again, it's my life purpose. I talked earlier about life purpose. I determined that my life purpose is trying to share some of the hard leadership lessons that I've learned with leaders, seasoned leaders and aspiring leaders, to help them become stronger leaders and maybe not make some of the same mistakes that I made in the past.
As far as I'm concerned, with that that picture that I painted with the people helping each other up the mountain, I think you're towards the top of the mountain, and you're definitely helping pull up as many people as you can. And it seems to me like the leadership qualities that you've learned over your career and what you're passing on now to the next generation of leaders is just incredible. And I'm really glad that you are continuing this mission and continuing to give back to the military, to the first responders, to organizations of all sorts, to help them create better leaders within their own ranks. And like you said, it will have a multiplied exponential effect where those leaders will now impact other people who will become leaders as well. And that's just going to help out years and years down the line. So I'm really glad that there are people like you out there who are helping pull people up the mountain.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, I appreciate you saying that. And you too are helping pull people up the mountain with this podcast you do, with the positive messages and important messages that you get out. You know, I love this, you know, concept of the Drive On podcast. And thank you for taking the time and the energy to do what you do, because I know it's helpful to many people.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate having you on. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.